What's up, everybody? This is episode 119 in the Clappercast. I'm Burke, and as always, joined by Sean. Sean, what's going on, my friend?
You know, I'm super excited today. I'm going to drop the plug real early, but over the past week here, I've been brought on to start writing about the Edmonton Oilers for OvertimeHeroics.net.
Nice. That's awesome, man. Congrats. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Super excited for that. So you can head over, once again, OvertimeHeroics.net. And I've already got my first article up there. It's on the Edmonton Oilers trade deadline strategy for 2022. So we'll talk a little bit about it later in the episode. But yeah, that's up there. Go give it a check.
Yeah. So are you going to be covering just the Oilers on that website, or what can people find?
So far, just the Oilers.
Okay.
Yeah. That's sort of, I got to pick and choose which team I wanted to. So of course I'm going to take the one that I actually know the stuff about. So Edmonton it is.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I look forward to reading your articles. I read the first one and I liked it a lot. And yeah, we'll get into it. Because there's kind of a lot to unravel there, I think.
There
depending
is.
On if you're an optimist or a pessimist, I think. so yeah, I mean, do you want to start there then with the Oilers? Just kind of dive right into that?
Yeah, that's a good segue. We'll dive right into that. So we've got the trade deadline coming up here in 2 weeks. And there's still a lot of uncertainty over a lot of teams, whether they're going to be buyers or sellers. And Edmonton is one that's kind of on the fence here. So we would have thought that by this point in the McDavid-Draisaitl era that the Oilers would be comfortably in a cup contention window. But here we are this season. They are still a bubble team. They're currently, as of recording this, they play later tonight, so this is probably going to change. But they're currently sitting 2 points out of a wild card spot, so they're not even in the playoffs right now. And, you know, the teams right above them all have a game in hand, so like it's not like they can catch up with an extra game or two. Interestingly, they are the only team with a positive goal differential that is not in the playoffs, so that is a little bit of an indicator that you know, maybe they're a little bit better than the third the out of a wild card spot indicates. But it does leave a lot to be questioned on what the team is going to do come the trade deadline, because they don't have much cap space. They have a couple of major holes in the roster that are not going to be cheap or easy to fill at this point. And they've got a lot of younger players and prospects coming up through the team, through the system right now, that might actually be the ones to fill those holes. So would Ken Holland want to go and waste prospects and draft picks on players that are just like going to be temporary stopgaps to give them the potential of making a playoff spot this year, and then he loses all of that next year when like Stuart Skinner or Dylan Holloway or Raphael Lavoie all start to make up to the NHL?
Yeah, it's kind of a perennial question, right? Like... How much do you dive into the playoff push? Like, how much confidence do you have in the team? I know, like, there's kind of some perennial buyers on the market, some perennial sellers. So I don't know. It's a tough call because it's like, do you just go like with a little bit of a move and get something like a little bit of a bump to your? Is that all you are comfortable doing? Is that gonna make a difference in the push? Is it not enough? I don't know. It's like,
yeah,
you know, the Oilers, I think you mentioned this in your article, but, you know, they're going to have to be a more rounded team. And, you know, like in playoffs, like McDavid and Draisaitl haven't been as dominant as they are in the regular season because, you know, it's a grittier game, less gets called, you know, there's less power plays. So, you know, do you bring somebody in? Does that really change like the Oilers game? So I don't know. It's a tough call, but I mean, do you have any guys out there that you've kind of, I don't know, highlighted or in your mind as someone that Oilers should get? Is there any sort of player type that you'd want them to bring in?
If they were to go for anything, I'd be looking for like a rental midline forward. It's someone to just give them a little bit more forward depth. Right now, they're mostly running with an 11 forward, 7 defense lineup in games. But they also are still dealing with some lineup fluctuations, especially with those bottom two forwards, that they don't really have great options when other players find themselves injured. So we're looking like Zach Cassian's still out, and when he comes back, like, is he going to be really effective in probably a third line spot that he's destined for, or should the team try and bring in someone else? Because that third line has been pretty good, and I don't see a reason to break it up. It's been Derek Ryan, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and Warren Fogle. Now, Nugent-Hopkins is hurt right now, but those, you know, that setup has been pretty good. So what I would ultimately be looking for is probably a scoring forward to fit in on that third line in the case of someone getting injured, or, you know, maybe they go back to a 12 forward 6D rotation and they can end up just having a scoring third line as well, because that is one of the major issues with Edmonton in the playoffs, is other teams can shut down McDavid and Draisaitl a lot better. But if they have some scoring depth farther down in the lineup, then they have options to go against the team, the opponent's weaker players, instead of, you know, losing all of their offensive talent against the other team's best defensive players.
Mm-hmm. So are there any, like, specific guys out there that are on, like, either a trade bait list or not that you would like to see come join the Oilers? There's some big names on the trade board, but, you know, there's some guys on there who might fit that description.
The one name, I'm mostly concerned about this name, but I feel like it's the type of player that Ken Holland or the team has been linked to for a long time and is still going to pursue, is Jake DeBrusk.
That's what I was thinking you were going
to
say.
Right, especially with the connection to the city, with his, you know, Louis DeBrusk playing for the Oilers, being the Oilers broadcaster, color guy. Like, there's a huge connection there. DeBrusk has just started to find his game again. He's been quite hot over the last couple weeks, and he's also been linked to the team over the past couple seasons in various trade rumors. So I feel like that's someone who's going to end up being targeted.
Yeah, it's tough because for Boston, he's just been playing on the top line with, like, Bergeron and Marchand. So, like, do they sell high on him now that he's been kind of producing, or do they just...
Well, I feel like that's part of the reason they're playing him there, is to sell him.
Could be, yeah, because they're probably going to want to get somebody in a bit more consistent, you know, a better fit overall, mm-hmm. for the team. You know, they're always a buyer. I don't know, like, Claude Giroux, I think, has been rumored with Boston. But yeah, I mean, like, aside from DeBrusk, like, there was a few guys on the list here that I kind of thought might be an interesting fit. And I don't know. I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts, but, like, you know, Mike Hoffman, that's a guy who's got a good shot. You know, he's definitely more of an offensive guy, you know, fits that kind of more scoring role. And then who was it? Like, Andrew Copps on the list, Ricard Raquel. I think
Raquel has been a type of player that's also been kind of sought after by Edmonton, just with his play style, with his skill set, and he'd probably fit in pretty well. I mean, he's a talented offensive player and scorer. One other interesting one that I would like, I don't know how probable it is Owen Tippett.
I was thinking him too, actually. Yeah,
yeah, he's on TSN's trade bait board, and I wouldn't mind that type of an acquisition, because, like, I'm worried about the team overpaying for, you know, veteran depth guys who don't have much more progression in their careers. But Owen Tippett's still pretty young, and he's pretty hyped up as a scoring forward. So yeah, I wouldn't be as opposed to paying a prospect or a pick for someone who's still kind of in a prospect stage himself.
And he's kind of been bumped out of the depth chart a little bit in Florida with some of the players that they've had coming in.
Yeah.
He's definitely got some skill, so yeah, it'd be interesting. And he's an RFA, so he'd probably keep him longer term.
And he'd probably be cheaper, too, because he's had a rough season. He's not doing great, 14 points in 42 games. So he wouldn't be overly expensive to keep past the season, because that's a big concern for Edmonton with the cap crunch that Ken Holland put them into over the last offseason.
Yeah, and I think part of that's probably because he has been bumped down the depth chart, right? Like, they might see some more potential there that he can, you know, contribute a bit more offensively in, you know, with a little bit more opportunity. But yeah, I mean, like, there's, it's interesting because, like, Anaheim's still very much in the race and they're right behind the Oilers. So it's like, a guy like Raquel, it's like, there's going to have to be quite a premium, I think, for the Oilers to get him from, like, you know, one of their main competitors for that.
Exactly.
Last
this
spot.
Is a divisional rival. Anaheim's 1 point behind Edmonton when we're recording this. With Edmonton has a couple of games in hand, but they're still so close.
One thing that was kind of interesting to me here, looking at this trade bait list on TSN, is just how many teams have players here that are still kind of in the mix. Like, I can't remember seeing, like, this kind of this many players that are on teams that are still, like, very much in the playoff hunt. And, you know, like there was, like, rumors that, like, Philip Forsberg was available. I don't think he's on this list because they came out and said, like, oh, we're looking to re-sign him since we had that conversation. But, you know, we had that conversation about just, like, they're in the playoff race. Like, why is this a thing? But, like, here again, you know, there's all of these guys that TSN has kind of earmarked as potentially being available.
I wonder if it's just kind of like an impact of the flat cap over the last couple seasons, that in order to upgrade on those players, they have to give up the player in order just to kind of balance out the cap, because they can't just take on a $5 million cap hit anymore like they might have used to. So they have to give up the player who's making four to get someone better who's making five.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. And, like, money in, money out. And,
exactly.
You know, these are guys that teams might be looking to move to upgrade on instead of just sell on, if that makes sense. So,
yeah,
you know, like, New York Rangers here have, like, Alexander Georgiev. He's in the top 10 here on TSN's trade bait list. The Rangers aren't what we'd call a seller, but they're looking to upgrade their team. So Georgiev might be a guy that they move.
I also think Georgiev quietly requested a trade because he's not getting any time. And, like, why would he when he's playing behind the new Vezina, you know,
yeah,
favorite Igor Shesterkin, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
now,
for sure.
The other thing the Oilers needed was a goalie, because, quite frankly, Koskinen and Smith have been far below average overall over the season. And looking again at this trade bait board, like, this is why I don't really want them to trade for a goalie right now, is because the ones who are mostly available are no better than the ones that they have.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, who's on here? Georgiev.
It's Georgiev and Korpisalo. I mean, Fleury already said no.
Fleury, yeah.
Samsonov, I guess, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, for the Capitals, like, I also kind of want them to, you know, upgrade in net, but apparently they've been linked with Fleury all season, and he keeps saying no, but...
We'll see what happens there. That would be amazing to see Marc-Andre Fleury in a Capitals jersey.
I don't know. I just hope that they don't bring, like, Holtby back, because he hasn't, I don't know, I just don't think it would work, but...
That'd be a solid end for his career, though. I guess he's only 32, but...
Yeah. I don't know, like, for the Capitals, like, they always do it. They always get a defenseman at the deadline. I just hope that they don't, like, overpay for, like, Chikrin or Klingberg or something. I hope instead they go after, like, a UFA in the off season. But that being said, like, I don't have a lot of faith in, like, Samsonov as a starter. I think Vanacek is probably more likely the guy after seeing what they've done this season. So if they move somebody and it's Samsonov and they get, like, I don't know, somebody, it'd be, I'm just interested to see what they do. Like, I don't know if there's anybody out there that I absolutely desperately want them to get, but I don't know, like, they were on a bit of a skid and they've kind of come out of it now, but I don't think that they, I don't know, like, they've fallen it so far, like, I don't know what they need to do.
Luckily, they still have, like, a solid 10-point lead on Columbus in the wild card race, so they're safe, but it's not looking great.
Yeah, I'm just not excited for, like, a potential first round matchup of, like, Tampa or Carolina. Not great. So, yeah.
The Carolina one went so well last time.
I know. But yeah, I mean, like, for the Capitals, like, they did get Oshie back. They got Mantha back. So they've gotten, like, their top six is kind of like what it looked like on day one of the season again. You know, their power play is starting to turn it around, so they're getting a bit better. I could very easily see them getting another defenseman just because that's what they do. I just hope it's more of like a depth guy this year rather than like, you know, when they tried to get like Shattenkirk. They sent a lot out and then he sucked and made the team actively worse. And like they've already got their offensive guy in John Carlson, so they don't need like John Klingberg. So I don't know what they're going to do, but
Michael Delzato.
Yeah.
Robert Hägg.
Shot block master. like one guy that like I is on this list that like I think might move to a team. I don't know where he's going to go, but like Damon Severson, he's been like playing lights out while Dougie Hamilton was hurt. And even when Dougie Hamilton's come back, he's been really good. So
yeah, he's not even, even when Hamilton was in the lineup before the previous injury, Severson was still playing more than Hamilton.
Yeah.
Ice time per game. So he's been good this season. I think he's kind of having a bit of a breakout year. Finally. You've kind of heard his name for a while.
I could really see a team, you know, trading for him. I think he's one of the guys that'll go. I don't know where, but like him and Giroux, I think, are, you know, some guys that I'm very interested to see where they go. You know, Giroux is like linked with like, it seems like every team in the league here.
Yeah, well, I've heard Colorado. It looks like Boston. I just saw Florida. A thing when I was searching Florida. Yeah. I just saw, that's the one I just saw when I was looking for stuff for this episode.
Yeah. One guy, and this is kind of turning into a bit of a ramble here on my part, but sorry for that. But as Anton Forsberg, we talked about it last episode, but he's been so good. And his team's just not helping him out. And I feel like he's a better goalie than like Samsonov has been this season. So it'd be kind of interesting to see if they just did like a flip, but I don't know if that would happen.
I feel like Washington would have to give up a bit more than just Samsonov.
Maybe. I don't know.
However, Forsberg is also having the best season of his career. So there's not a whole lot of track record for him to keep this up.
Yeah, true. Anyway, it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on that. You know, the trade bait board is there. Sometimes there's crazy movement, other times there's not. But I think, yeah, you made an interesting point with the salary cap that it's going to be a different one, I think, compared to, you know, some previous seasons where, you know, guys are moving like hotcakes. It's going to be like a more calculated move where there's maybe some more roster players involved going back to the other team. So I think like teams like Arizona and Buffalo that have a lot of cap space could do really well if they play their cards right. And then another team, just quickly here before we can move on or get back to the Oilers, but Seattle, you know, what are they going to do? First season, they're not going to make playoffs. What are they going to do? Are they going to sell everybody and get more picks? I think they're probably not because of just how they did in the expansion draft, but
yeah, I don't think they have the organizational depth yet to sell everybody for picks. Like they don't really have, I don't think they have too many players that they can call up to replace. So they'd be, you know, I'm sure they're going to have a handful of guys that are going to be attractive trade options. Like we've heard about Mark Giordano being one of the defenders on the board. I mean, Cale Yarncroke's on here as well on the TSN trade bait board. But then you could even look to some of their better players like Yanni Gord or Jared McCann have both been solid when they're in the lineup. So it'd be interesting to see, like, maybe they sell a bit high on those types of forwards because they're the kind of scoring depth forwards that other teams might want heading into the playoffs. And then that would give them a couple more draft picks that they were unable to get for their first draft, for their first entry draft. It would give them a couple of those now.
Yeah. And then just real quick here, one more trade deadline thing because I can't help myself.
Go ahead.
Okay, Vancouver Canucks, do you think neither one of or both JT Miller and Brock Besser get traded?
I think it would be unwise for them to trade JT Miller despite him having such a good season, such a good stretch with Vancouver and being so high value that he would get a lot in return, it would be really unwise for the team to trade him. And I think it's probably more likely Besser gets traded. There's something about that player style, like the flashy sniper, that I feel like would be someone that you could get a GM to overpay for. And I also feel like Miller just has more value to the lineup as a whole because he does everything. He plays, he can play anywhere. He plays in any situation. He seems to be a pretty prominent presence in that locker room. Now, I don't know if Miller's on that board because he wants out or because it's just rumored. I can't remember if there was like any sort of a trade request rumor.
There was
going
rumors,
on
but I think he denied it and said like, no, I want to be here. And I think it's just because like there's so much talk about it because his contract is so cheap.
Right.
And then
he's making less than Besser right now. That's the crazy
part.
Yeah,
and he's due for a substantial increase. So there's people who think like, oh, the Canucks won't be able to afford him. Should they trade him and get something for it? I don't know.
Well, I think he does have one more year left on his contract, though, after this one.
Does he? He does. But
yeah.
So it's like, yeah, do they trade him now when he's at peak value, really? Or do they hang on? You know, he's over a point per game player, so they could get a whole lot for him.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know,
yeah,
with having the extra season still left on his contract, like that's a whole lot of value added right there. They could get so much for him. Like considering, I just remember when this trade happened, when the Canucks got JT Miller, we were all kind of like, that's a lot for him, was the general consensus. But he's absolutely shown that it was worth it. And he'd probably get even more now than he did back then.
Yeah. Yeah, and like Besser, like I'm just seeing here, like his qualifying offer is $7.5 million.
Oh, God.
So, I think you move on from that considering his point production right now. You know, they've been kind of dropped for sure since his wrist surgery or whatever. It sucks because he's such a good guy and everything, but, you know, they're clearly not making playoffs here. I mean, I shouldn't say that. They could make playoffs, but I think this is a time to sell on a player who, you know, has been rumored in trade, like all sorts of trade speculation for, you know, a couple seasons now. I don't know. I think one of them goes, though. I think one of them for sure goes. I just don't know.
That's probably accurate.
It'll
especially
probably end up
with
being neither.
It'd be the time for the Canucks to do that, to get a draft pick out of someone, at least, since, you know, considering they've given up quite a few and they're sort of in a bit of a reset rebuild with new GM, new coach and everything.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like they've got a kind of, they're at an interesting crossroads. It's like, do they hang on and try and sign them all? Or do they just get some younger guys in there, some more picks and everything, and just, you know, build around that younger core? I don't know. That's the one kind of mark against JT Miller, is that, you know, he's a little bit older than, you know, some of the rest of the guys out there. So, do they move him and then just kind of keep that core together, or do they?
But at the same time, like, he's only 28 compared to like Horvat's 26, Brock Besser's 25, Garland's 25, Pearson's 29. So he's on the, you know, upper edge of their core age wise, but he's not like aging out of the league anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean he his birthday's in, I'm just looking at Cap Friendly here, his birthday's like next week.
Oh.
So.
Okay, well,
you know,
he is on the upper edge of the core anyways.
I don't know. It's, who knows what the Canucks are going to do? Like, they just, new management team, you know, what are they going to do? Are they going to try and hold on? Or are they going to try and get some assets early on in their tenure? But anyway, that's enough rambling, I think, on the trade board. Is there anything else you wanted to say about the Oilers, or did you want to move on?
No, I think that was kind of the main question is like, what are they going to do? Do they go all in? Do they wait for another year? I mean, I can say like, I don't think this is the year for them to spend on anything. I think their smarter bet is to wait until at least next season. Once, you know, one of the, you know, some of the four defensive prospects they have playing on the roster right now, and a few more of the forward prospects find their way up, just so they can see what holes they actually need to fill. And with Koskinen's contract up this offseason, that brings a spot for Stuart Skinner in the lineup to stay in the NHL permanently. He's been their best goalie this season, and he's probably next in line. Like, he's probably the guy the organization wants to take over in the net. So it'd be kind of unwise to go and trade for a goalie to spend a whole bunch, because you're going to have to give up a lot to get that goalie at this point, especially when everyone in the league knows that's exactly what you need.
Yeah.
So it'd be kind of a dumb move to go and overpay for all of this now when you've got the inside, the internal assets to fill it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's always the question, do you wait or do you go all in now? Yeah.
It'd at least be smarter to wait until you're comfortably in a contending spot, like in a divisional playoff spot at least, and not trying to fight for a wild card.
Yeah, and then on the other side is like, if you don't do anything, does that show players like McDavid and Draisaitl that you weren't, you know, actively trying to win?
That's the hard part. So it'd be interesting to see the conversations behind the scenes between Ken Holland and the team's core about what the plan is, what the timeline is, and how many more years that they're expected to wait, because, like I ended the article off, like this patience can only last for so long, and like that is starting to run out. So if these prospects don't work out by next season, they're going to have to start like actually making that desperation move to go all in, maybe start overpaying and go all in just to show the core, show the organization, show the fan base that like, hey, we're trying to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Well, there's some other teams around that are probably in similar predicaments. And one of them that has been definitely struggling as of late is the Minnesota Wild, and they're 2-8-0 in their last 10. And I don't know if you've been watching them or following them at all, but they've been pretty rough lately. Like,
yeah,
in their last, here, hang on, what is it? What's the stat? In their last 8 games, they've allowed at least 4 goals.
Yeah. Yeah. So in this, I can expand on that stat too. So then in this 10 game stretch, they're 2-8. They've scored 32 goals, which is okay, but they've given up 49 goals in 10 games. And like you said, in that 10 games, there's only 2 of them that they had let in less than 4 goals, and both of those were 3.
Yeah. And,
I
think they've kind of been living and dying by Cam Talbot, how he's playing, it seems,
yeah,
or at least his stats.
And that is the main driver of that slump right now, is the goaltending. Talbot and Kekkonen have both been a bit awful in this last 10 games.
Yeah, just some real backbreaker goals, like just when they need a timely save, it's not there. Mm-hmm. And just like sloppy defense. Like I was watching that game against Dallas yesterday, and like the offense was there, it's just like they just played so sloppy in their own zone,
yeah,
and gave up some real weak rebounds, and yeah, it was rough. Also, Dallas, shout out to Jason Robertson, back-to-back hat tricks, pretty legit, first since Ovi to do that. But yeah, Minnesota, it's like, you know, you look at Cam Talbot's stat line and like his last I don't know.
Well, going back to the start of this slump, you know, on the 16th of February, his save percentage is .866, and he's got a 1-4 record.
Well, and in the next two games, or he's in the 700s. It's like, oof. You know, there is a shutout in there, but it's against Chicago. But you know, getting lit up by Florida, Ottawa. It's like, okay. It's pretty rough there. I don't know. Like I said, the offense there, but it's just like they're just getting scored on way too much. And so,
yeah,
you know, they were looking really strong at some point, but this is just a really big fall from grace right now.
Yeah, and even looking at the team overall, their stat line, their like fancy stats and stuff, they're still doing okay. Like they've got a over 50% Corsi and Fenwick. Their possession's okay. And scoring chances are okay. Like, they're generating, here, let me just scroll over here. Like, in this same date range, they've generated 233 chances for and 188 against. You know, and their high danger chances are about even. 75-72. It's just they're giving up so many more goals, like high danger goals for 7, high danger goals against 18.
Yeah, so it's like that clearly shows that it's been goaltending, right?
Yeah,
like,
you know, it's an 88.5 save percentage and 0.981 PDO below 1.0 is generally indicative of bad luck or poor goaltending if you can't keep that above 1.
Yeah, and that game yesterday, so March 6th against Dallas, could end up being an absolutely huge game because Dallas is a game. They've played one more game than Minnesota. They have the same number of points. That was a huge game for that division. So if Dallas ends up sneaking in ahead of them and stealing that spot, you just got to remember that game because Minnesota is definitely in it. And, you know, like I said, the offense was totally there. They just totally fell apart in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Rough.
Yeah, I didn't even realize the potential implications of that game. But that's going to be an interesting one to look back on in a month's time once the season starts coming to an end. Be like, oh, look at, you know, where did this team get 2 more points than the other team? Like, oh, well, they lost a divisional game in the middle of this really bad slump that brought them back even, basically.
Yeah, you know, those divisional games are so important. To not get any points out of it, it's just real tough. So, yeah, I mean, like, do you think that they'll be trying to... What do you think they'll be trying to do in front of the deadline here? Do you think that they... write it out? Do you think that they add? Do you think that they... What do you think?
I think that they have... This is one of those ones where I'm going to have to say, like, they have to go all in this season. You know, I said it in the past that this season is their window to be, like, a legit competitor because of how much dead cap space they're going to have for the 3 seasons after this. That... let me scroll up here. They've got... According to Cap Friendly, they're going to have $11.5 million in deadline cap space, which is going to be huge to bring in a couple of big names, kind of buy this season a whole bunch of stuff. Like, they could go after Giroux, they could go after Petrie, they could go after all these... Well, I guess not Petrie, he's got a lot of years after. But they could go after some of these guys who are pending UFAs or pending RFAs, and they've got the cap space to do it. They've got... You know, they've got a fairly well-stocked draft pick pool over the next couple of seasons, and they kind of have to. They're not going to be able to afford anything beyond this season because of how much dead cap space they have. So it's like they're in win-now mode in my mind.
Yeah, they've definitely got some huge cap penalties coming up. So, yeah, okay, Bill Guerin, what do you do? What do they even have to give up? I don't know.
I've heard Fiala's name. Yeah, I've heard Fiala's name in some trade stuff, but you also don't want to give him up when he's one of the better players. You know, Ryan Hartman has had an amazing season. He's someone I could see them trying to sell high on, even though he is really cheap. You know, that's kind of somewhere they could maybe find a bit more value than they otherwise might have to avoid giving up too many of their best draft picks.
Yeah. Yeah, it would suck to give up Fiala because I think that line of, like, Fiala... Freddie Gaudreau and Boldy has been pretty good for them. But yeah, Hartman would be interesting. But again, like, Hartman would be, like, such a good player to have during playoffs, right?
Exactly.
Kind of like that mold of player. Minnesota. You know, they kind of came out of nowhere last year, I guess. And then what do they do? You know, I'd like to see them make playoffs, but they kind of got to turn things around or at least hold 500 from here.
Exactly. They have to find a way out of the slump very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the last, like, 30, 25-ish games of the season will go by real quick. It could be very easily surpassed by, you know, both Dallas and Nashville really quick. And if they keep losing, hell, Winnipeg could even jump back in there.
they're only 9 points back, but... Winnipeg's been struggling. They're trying to find their game again, but I mean, they could come out of a slump at the right time and make a late run.
Absolutely. Okay. Is there any other teams or things you wanted to talk about? And I guess the one thing I wanted to bring up here is just that absolute display of goaltending between the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Detroit Red Wings, which included a goaltender getting pulled, his replacement going in, and then him going back in later in the game because the backup got lit up too.
Where's David Ayers when you need him?
I know, hey? Also, yeah, shout out to Craig Anderson. I think he beat the Leafs again, right? Like, did they win that game, Buffalo? He's like another 40-year-old goalie.
Oh, yeah, actually, I think that did happen. I think the Leafs gave up another game against Buffalo.
Yeah. So, shout out to Buffalo. But, yeah, I mean, like, that game was absolutely insane. Kudos to the Leafs for actually winning it. I really thought they were going to lose.
It got so close.
Because they were up 3-1 after the first, and then the Leafs just went crazy in the second period and scored 4 goals.
Yeah, what were they up, like 7-2 at one point?
Yes. And then Detroit scored 1, 2, 3, 4 straight within the first like 5.5 minutes of the third period.
Jesus.
And then Toronto got one back, and then Detroit scored again, and then Toronto got a shorthanded goal, and then they got, I think, an empty netter.
Yeah.
With Mitch Marner. So
yeah, Marner had 6 points that game, I think.
The one funny thing I loved out of this was that John Tavares got 0 points.
Which I find absolutely... I mean, okay. I guess it makes sense when Marner has 6 points that them being on separate lines, there is a chance that Tavares' line won't have any. But still, there's the power play. There's, you know, getting stuck on the ice for in the middle of a line change, like 10 goals and you don't have a single point.
That's terrible. It's so bad.
It's like that other, I can't remember the guy's name. It was like this absolute blowout, like an 8-3 win or something, and there's the defender who was -3.
Yeah, yeah.
So, something that like that. Leafs. I don't remember the situation. Yeah.
It's also a Leafs guy, yeah. I know what you're talking about. I don't remember his name, though. But, yeah, it's like, how do you do that? I'm going to go Tavares. I think he's been definitely slumping as far as goal production, but he's been, like, making a lot of good plays and, like, a lot of assists and stuff. But it's just funny. And then like another thing that I don't remember, I think it was someone on Sportsnet was just saying like Matthews had less, he had 14:33 ice time that game, Marner had 15:07, so like they had really low ice times for like the amount of like points they put up.
Well, I guess at a certain point in the blowout you just kind of start sitting and giving the depth guys more time, but even then Marner scored at the very end of the game, so he must have gotten back in action in the later half of the third.
Yeah, it was just an absolute wild game, and I just, after Detroit scored 4 in a row, I thought Toronto was going to lose for sure.
You told me about it, and then I turned the game on just because I wanted to see if they'd choke away a 7-2 lead, because I was following the game just on the Yahoo Fantasy app, and I'm like, oh, sweet, Toronto's up 7-2, Marner's got a few points, I'm looking good for the tonight. And then you tell me, like, 5 minutes after I checked it, I had gone to cook dinner or something. And you're like, oh, Toronto just giving up like a 5-goal lead pretty much. And I, sure enough, I go and look and it's 7-6. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, it was absolutely insane. And yeah, Marner, I think he got like, what, like 4 goals and like assist or something, or 2 assists.
Something like that.
So a casual 6 points. And he was outdone by Nick Schmaltz. In that Arizona game, he had 7 points. I think it was, what, 2 goals, 4 assists? Or no, 5 assists or something?
Something like that.
But yeah, hell of a game for offense, but the not fun if you're part, so... a fan of defense.
Yeah. Anyways, like that game, 10-7 final. The first time since December 2nd, 2017, that a team scored 10 goals in a single game. It was last done by Montreal, also versus Detroit.
We want 10.
We do want 10. And the last time there was a 17-goal game, it looks like it was a 9-8 game, Winnipeg versus Philly back in October 2011. So it's been over 10 years since a single game had 17 goals in it.
Yeah, is absolutely insane. Quick note, goalies, Jack Campbell posted an 800 save percentage. He had 5 goals against on 25 shots. Peter Mrazek was a 750 save percentage. He let in 2 goals on 8 shots. Alex Nedeljkovic had a 760. He had 6 goals against on 25 shots. And then Thomas Greiss had let in 4 goals on 14 shots and had a 714. So just a real rough night for the goalies. Not a lot of good tape, I think, for the goalies after that one.
No, that's going to be a long video session for some people.
Honestly, yeah, I think you just kind of move on from that. It's like, yeah, that was a rough one for all the goalies involved.
At least it's all of the goalies and not just one goalie. Every single goalie that was in that rink was just not having a good day.
Yeah, that's just brutal. So, anyway, that was just an interesting game to watch. Like, it was just like, I was watching it, and after the first, I was like, oh, yeah, I'll watch something else. Like, Detroit's not going to win this. And then, you know, after the second, I think that whatever I was watching, like, ended, and I put it back on, and then I saw, like, all those Detroit goals in a row, and I was literally laughing out loud. Like, I was just so, like, what the hell is going on? This is so insane. And I guess last thing before we wrap up here, but shout out to Danny DeKeyser getting waived on his birthday by the Detroit Red Wings. So that sucks, but
shitty move, but you know,
he's not great. So 6 points, 43 games, minus 12. Red Wing fans are actually pretty pumped about it. I saw one person say that the shackle has been removed from Sider's ankle.
Oh God.
it's pretty funny, but yeah, that sucks. But yeah, Yzerman, just it's all business, baby.
That wraps things up for this time here on Clappercast. Make sure you rate and review this episode and toss a follow or subscribe our way. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter at Clappercast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.